You're listening to theoutdoorstation.co.uk.
Welcome to part one of two special extended episodes recorded at the recent and now world famous OMM, the original Mountain Marathon sporting event, which took place the weekend of the 25th of October 2008 in Borrowdale, Cumbria. This podcast deals with the event itself, sharing our experience and those of others also taking part. The highs, lows, thrills, and in some cases, spills, as the race took place in the eye of a very unique, wet and windy storm on that Saturday in the heart of the Lake District. Part two will deal with a very different kind of storm, one which started unbeknown to the organisers and competitors that Saturday night in the media. We will look closely at the facts behind the story, which went around the world, removing Obama and the financial crisis off the headlines and placed the supposed evacuation and rescue of 2,500 marathon competitors above everything else. Yes, we will talk to everyone involved and get the full and factual story. But first, in this episode, for those picking up this podcast from various links around the world, what does the original Mountain Marathon entail? The OMM, formerly the KIM, is now in its 41st year. It is a competition to test teams made up of two people at every level. Their mental approach, fitness, equipment, navigation ability, and ability to traverse mountainous terrain in safety over a period of 2 days. From the start to the finish on the second day, including the overnight camp, the team is a self-sufficient unit, responsible for its own safety and well-being. Outside help cannot be sought or accepted, unless the team has retired or is seeking help for an injured party. There is a defined minimum kit list, including waterproof clothing, sleeping equipment, tent, food for 36 hours, and first aid. And this is spot-checked randomly throughout the competition at key locations. GPS and mobile phones are not allowed. Navigation is based purely on the compass you bring with you and the map you're given on the start line. Yes, this event isn't for softies out for a day's walk. It is designed to be tough and has run successfully in all weathers for over 40 years. And the 3,000 competitors just love it. There are seven different classes to potentially enter, each one with a different route, different checkpoints and different level of difficulty. The elite, the true marathon runners, A, B and C classes are linear routes. Miss out any of the checkpoints and you are disqualified. The long, medium and short score classes are a time-limited orienteering event. You select the checkpoints to suit your fitness level to gain maximum points before getting to the overnight camp. Points are deducted for every minute you're over your allotted time. The start line consists of seven channels, one for each class of the event, and every couple of teams have a start time separated by 1 minute. The course map covers approximately 120 square kilometres of mountainous terrain, and this is handed to you when the horn is sounded, and then you're off. This year, Rose and I entered the short score, and I wanted to share the experience with listeners to the Outdoor Station. My recording gear was duly sealed in a waterproof bag, and a small microphone, which normally wouldn't be affected by the wind, was strapped to my rucksack. However, gusts of 90 miles an hour were predicted that weekend, so please forgive some of the sound quality which varies throughout this podcast.
So we've arrived. It's 9 o'clock on the Saturday morning. The weather forecast, local weather forecast, has got even worse than the previous one. I'm not sure if you can hear this. I'll try and block it from the wind as best I can, but it's picking up a little bit of a hooli before we even get to the start line. We're working our way up there now. The actual location's down the end of a very long, narrow country lane, and there's a lovely farmyard campsite. Well, it would be on a good day. But everybody's in fine spirits. We all know what we're expecting. which is potentially an awful lot of water, and up to 90 mile an hour gusts apparently on the peak. So I expect we'll be keeping away from there. How are you feeling this morning, Rhoda? Are you warm and cuddly?
Oh, it's cold. I'd be glad to get going, actually.
So I'll set the recorder up near the start line. When you hear the hooter, that's the hooter for the current group of people in the starting gate to start. They call you forward, and our start time's 9:41, so we have to be ready, and then they'll hand you the map and off you go. We've got 5 hours to get to the end, keeping within time so we don't lose any points, and pick up as many checkpoints as we can. I'm not too sure I'm going to get a chance to chat to anybody at this stage, but certainly I'll try and do so tonight, and try and explain as best we can the event as it unfolds. But certainly at the moment there's just a queue of about 100 people all at taped off area, and the rest of everybody's just hunkered down behind the wall trying to keep out the wind, waiting their turn. So I'll be back soon.
And also down behind the wall, awaiting their start time, was Fran Whitworth, Jilly Markham, Andy Heald and Chris Smart.
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
How are you feeling this morning?
Chilly at the moment.
A bit nervous.
Is this the first event you've done?
First for me.
First for you, yeah?
Yes.
And how many have you done?
About 12.
Yeah?
Yep.
Yeah, so you know what to face, do you?
Yes, definitely.
I don't suppose you've seen the weather forecast for today, have you?
Yes. It's foul. Absolutely foul.
Lots of nice rain.
That's nice rain. So which class are you in?
We're in the short score.
Oh, right, OK. Same as us. And are you expecting it to be a joyous occasion when you get to the campsite?
Yes. Because the weather forecast for Sunday is better, so it's bound to be good to get to the mid-camp.
Yeah. So what pleasure do you get from these events, then, if you've done it 12 times?
I don't know. It's just been masochistic.
Sense of achievement.
Yes, it must be a sense of achievement. That must be the one, yes, sense of achievement.
And how did she persuade you to join in?
Her partner drops out. And we're in the same running club, so she just asked me. She didn't have to persuade me.
Yeah.
I've done the mountain bike Polaris before, right. So I know that's a similar sort of thing.
Right, so you weren't coming into it completely blind then?
No, not completely blind.
So what gear have you carrying with you? Are you sort of carrying going light, or are you going comfortable?
Just the essentials, but not the minimal scrimping essentials.
Yeah, because some people are getting it down to sort of like 3K. It's incredible, isn't it?
Got no extras, but moderately substantial.
And do we have chocolate in the rucksack?
Lots of.
Chocolate raisins. Chocolate raisins. Jelly babies, dolly mixtures.
Yeah.
That's the key
and
to success.
Turkish delight, I noticed.
Oh, Turkish delight.
There.
Yeah.
You're a walking sweet shop.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the key to success.
Do you do many of these, or is this sort of the one event of its type you do?
I usually only do this. I did do the Alpine Kim this year in France, which was lovely. Because it was in August and it was warm.
And it seemed like such a good idea.
Yeah.
Well, best of luck, then, ladies. I'll see you possibly in the campsite and watch with envy as you tuck into your various amounts of chocolate.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Good morning to you guys.
Good morning.
What course are you on?
We're doing the long score.
Long score. Yeah. And you've been reduced by an hour because of the weather conditions, I understand.
That's right. I'm surprised about that. I've never known that before.
Really? So, it isn't particularly good, the weather forecast, is it?
No, it's not good for a lot of rain coming in later, apparently, and it's very windy already, so let's see. But, we're probably going to cope with 7 hours, but six, at least we'll be in camp earlier.
Yeah. The long score, I take it you've done this event on several occasions, have you?
This is my 18th.
18th?
Yeah, and I've done the long score about a dozen of those.
Right.
So, I've done it almost every year for the last 20 years, anyway.
Apart from the time element, is there a big psychological difference between the long and the short?
I think it's better because you spend a certain amount of time planning your route, etc. Well, if you've only got quite a short course, then that's a bigger proportion of it. So it kind of gets things a bit more in proportion to go further, I think.
Are there the same number of checkpoints in the short score as the long score?
I think there will be more in the long score.
Yeah.
You expect to get a higher point score.
And how about yourself? How many have you done?
Well, I've done the long score once before. I actually managed to complete the elite class last year.
Oh, congratulations.
But, it was a struggle. It was only about achieving the end, but I managed to get there. But I'm not as fit this year. So I was going to do the A score, but my partner dropped out at the last minute. So Andy and I teamed up on Wednesday night and we're off to do the long score together now, having first spoken on Wednesday night.
So, oh, really? Okay.
So it'll be good.
Yeah, we never met before last night.
Oh, right. Okay.
No, Chris answered my Lonely Hearts Club advert on Tuesday or something. But we both lost our partners in the last week.
Thank God for the forum, eh? Thank God for the website. Yeah. So tell me then, with the Elite and the ABCs, are they all a linear course?
Yes, yeah. You have to do all the checkpoints in the set order that they're on the map. So there's an element, certainly I think in the shorter courses, of people tending to go in a bit of a line, but it is. There's still a lot of route choice that is taking place, and it was quite interesting to look on the software that the website where you can look at route choices that people have taken.
Oh, I see.
And you know, even on a linear course, people are taking quite a few different route choices.
Do you get penalised then if you miss some of the checkpoints out on a linear course?
You get disqualified if you miss any checkpoint. You just get disqualified effectively. You can't do that. You don't do the second day. So the first time I did the Elite, it was dark by the time we were looking for the penultimate checkpoint. We missed it, and therefore the second day we didn't do the second day.
Right. Okay. So there's no time limit on those courses then. Is there?
You have to begin by 8 o'clock. There's a closing time of 8 o'clock. Yeah.
Okay. So do you feel that this side of it, the short, long and medium scores, are a sort of a really different type of challenge?
It is a very different challenge. I mean, it's almost more thinking and planning involved, and I really do enjoy the score classes, so that's why I was quite happy to team up with Andy.
Right, okay, guys, well, the best of luck to the pair of you. I expect to see you at some stage, perhaps in the campsite, if not having a cup of tea at the very end. So best of luck to you. Cheers.
Very well. Thanks.
Morning, folks. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
1682. Morning.
So it's time out gone.
Yeah.
And instead of starting the train, it's not quite there.
Yeah.
I'm just starting a little bit longer there.
Starting here, we're starting there from the neck. Finishes there.
Lots in between.
And there's dots all over the place. Struth.
And which are we?
We are down at the triangle down there.
Right.
Cheers, thanks. Start the stopwatch. Right, I think if we. Okay, got that.
Yeah.
If we head up this path here where everybody else is going, up to that lake there, get that 30 pointer there, and then start to come back. Well, we can either, when we've got that, we could, well, there, what are these on top of the ridges? You see, these are on the ridge there, and go round. It's a ridge one, or it's that, a bit of a pig, actually. 5 hours. As the crow flies to the campsite, it's probably only about 6k, but there's a hell of a lot of very, very steep climbs here. That seems the obvious one to go for. Should you do that then? Should you go head for that one? Head for that 15. That's a steep climb there. It's down that valley there, up to that 20. Or we go... No, it's down the valley.
Quite a long way.
Yeah, so yeah, but it's down the valley. It's down the valley there, down the valley there. That climb there. There's a 40 there.
How much would that be, I wonder?
Go that way. That's a bit the way to do. Go to 30, 15, 35, 20, 10, 40. And then over to the campsite that way.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Right, I think we'll pause the recording and pick it up a bit later on. Well, we found the first checkpoint. We're just getting down into a little gully where there's about a dozen people that also found the checkpoint. Oh, it's true. And this is really tough going. We've been going hour and 20 odd minutes. This is our first checkpoint, and it's it was headwind all the way and a very, very hard climb and slippy underfoot. My feet are actually gone numb because it's so cold and the wind, and my gloves are no longer waterproof, which is a great shame. But otherwise, oh, it's quite pleasant down here. Blimey. Sure, that is the right one. Letters B, E on the post. Yep, that's the one. Beat. So that's that one registered. But bloody neck. Oh, and it's surrounded by very, very deep water. So consequently, my feet are as cold. Well, that wasn't very pleasant, I have to say. That was really tough going. Straight through. So just change of course now. I made a mistake thinking it was on the other side of the ridge. So sorry about that, Rose. Right, it's taken us, look, that's where we started. That's where we are. That's taken us an hour and 30 minutes. Blimey. What is a sensible route to take?
Well, you do that, I'm going to break out the chocolate.
Well, if that's taken us an hour and the wind is blowing against us, we could go down into that gully, which will be wide open to the wind, and down ahead of washed water. But you see, if that's taken us an hour, we've got another one to get there, which is around there somewhere. Can't see it. That's 15 points. That's 35. If you said now that takes us 2 hours, that's 3.5 in total. We've still got to get across to there. In fact, it's probably not fair to fold the map like that. Let's fold the map so we can see the end. You're right, you're not too cold. Alright, there's the end. That's where we are. One climb, two climbs, then we can't, and then a steep, you can't climb down there. We go this way, we go round the edge of the ridge against the wind, but we drop down the valley, the gully down to the valley. There's another one there which is worth 35 points, so we can either come up over, that's a long hard climb, well it's a short hard climb actually, but it's how many metres? 400 metres, yeah.
Through,
well, it's like that, or go around the outside of there, you see, but the thing is, you're running around, yeah, but you could be running around established paths, but there's a climb there, and then we've still got to get over to there, so we'd have to come down there, drop down, another climb there. Blimey.
It's a killer.
It's a killer. Oh, we just go and get this 15, then that 35, then head over there to the 20. But again, that's going, it's got to, wherever you go, it's going to be a steep climb.
Yeah.
Oh, Well, it's all very well training on a reasonable day in the Malverns, but it's nothing like this. Oh, it's true. All right, let's try a gentle jog, shall we? Rose? What? Try a gentle jog.
Yeah.
See if you don't stumble too much across this lot. Finally, we're running with poles. You have to. Oh, both our feet. Yes, we're using Innovate. Yes, they're wet. But because we haven't been working very hard, or only on climbs, and then the climbs have been through streams, feet are cold, to say the least. Almost a face full of gravel. In fact, we're still running in streams. Sure you want those poles?
Yeah, I feel more secure.
Okay. This is incredible, isn't it?
Heather Elston and Mark Britton were also on the short score. As they made it to the top of the first ridge, they were exposed to the full force of the rapidly changing weather.
We set off at 12 minutes past nine, and we went in a southeasterly route, which we actually thought would be the best route because we could pick up a path on the high ground and perhaps have a clear route as to our way back to the Midway camp. The rain hadn't started up until probably about 10 o'clock, if I remember rightly. We were coming uphill at that point, and then it just really came down very heavy. The wind was prevailing. We were walking against the wind. We couldn't walk in a straight line, basically. We're having to keep our head down, and we were becoming quite disorientated. We made it to the first checkpoint, and we're on our way to the second checkpoint when conditions just became increasingly worse. Mark and I decided to actually, at that point, rather than try and make it to the Midway camp, it would be probably safer to make our way back to the headquarters, where we could also do another option of taking the lower ground to the Midway point if things had improved at that point.
So the conditions turned against you. I mean, that ridge is a fairly exposed ridge, Mark, and you must have been as battered as we were climbing up just a bit further down below you. We're about an hour behind you. We certainly had the full force of it coming at us, so you must have been exposed fairly early up there.
Yeah, it was very difficult actually moving against the wind after we hit the first checkpoint. And because I need magnifying glasses to actually read the map, my glasses were sort of steamed up, getting rain in them as well. I was having a lot of trouble actually reading the map, and it was my day to navigate, so that posed a big problem. So we couldn't move as fast as we could normally because my map reading was very difficult. And the wind was against us, so we couldn't actually move fast enough to actually keep warm.
Yeah, I mean, we were suffering from exactly the same problems. It was a case of just the back, holding the map steady enough to actually visualise and focus on the direction and place where you wanted to go to, and trying to orientate it and orientate yourself in those conditions, because the head was down all the time,
wasn't
it?
That's right, yeah, that's right. And actually also a point that was really quite dangerous for us, when we started to decline, the actual pass that we'd used had become really torrid waterfalls, so our footing was not very good, to be honest. The water was going at such a pace. We were actually stumbling, falling, and having to cross quite deep waterfalls, really. So from that point of view, it was quite dangerous too.
So you were out for about 3 hours before you got down to headquarters, as it were, where you were going to take a shortcut across towards the finish area. But I guess they'd cancelled the event by then.
They had, to be honest. By the time we got back into the valley, we could already see people heading down back, obviously retreating. That did make us feel a little bit better, to be honest, because you always feel a bit of a defeatist, either defeatist or making a sensible decision. It depends which way you look at it. By the time we did get to the HQ, there was hot tea facilities, hot food. We were in the dry. And morale was really quite high. Everybody was, you know, I didn't see anybody looking distressed or anything like that. We were cold, yeah, but I think glad to get back under cover, to be honest.
So they looked after you well at headquarters there?
Yeah, definitely. Well, they took our dibs off us to make sure that there was a record of everybody who was retiring. And Wilf's mobile canteen was up and running with the hot stew, like Heather said, tea and also soup, which was absolutely fantastic. And I must also say that the farmer had been mobilised as well to help people get their cars off the fields, which I'm really grateful to him. I don't know who he is, but thank you very much for helping us get off the wet car park, which was flooding very fast.
So you actually managed to obviously get the car out before the road flooded. I've seen some of the video clips, and it obviously did come pouring in at that point, which was a shame, really, that both headquarters and the halfway camp did get flooded. I think that was just one of those things which was perhaps not expected from the amount of as bad as the weather forecast had been. But had you seen, or did you see in your entire experience, anybody that was disheartened, you know, negative towards the event or anything like that at all?
Absolutely no way. Everybody knew, they were prepared, you know, they knew what they were going into. They're experienced. The arm actually makes sure that you are experienced and that you've got your kit. They do have random checklists to make sure that everybody has got the requirements. And everybody was, you know, cold, wet, but morale was really high.
Due to numerous factors, not least the worsening weather conditions, around 2 p.m, the OMM director, Jen, decided to cancel the event. Of course, many of the 3,000 competitors were still out on the hills trying to navigate against the clock. One of those was the very experienced Charlie Sproson from the Outdoor Warehouse and partner David, still working hard on the A-class route.
Fantastic. I really had a good day. I can't really moan about any side of it. It was wild, windy conditions. You know, it was. I suppose in some people's minds it could be quite scary, but it's something that I really like, and I get invigorated in conditions like that. I've never seen winds coming in so many different directions all at the same time at such speeds, and I've never really seen people taken off their feet by wind before. But there was a point at one point in the day, low down in the valleys, where three people got blown straight off their feet. And, you know, it was quite a far out day, I suppose.
It was certainly exciting, but I was fully expecting it from the weather forecast I'd seen, so I guess you were as well.
Yeah, completely. I mean, you know, most people should have checked the mountain weather forecast, and I think that's probably the best one to look at. It did, you know, report that it was going to be between 70 to 90 mile an hour gusts, and that was pretty much true. It might have even exceeded that a point. And so, yeah, anybody who'd taken part in the event should really have been fully prepared for that. Plus, they also did say at the start of the event that people should be prepared for foul weather. The courses were shortened because it was bad weather, so we had shortened courses, you know, for that basic respect. So, yeah, I don't think anybody should have gone out there without knowing what was really going to go on.
Well, I thought it was a fairly balanced approach. I felt that everyone in the start line and everyone I saw during the course of the event all were kitted appropriately and were obviously ready for the event. There didn't seem to be anybody expecting a day's walk in the summer hills. But from a personal point of view, I found the challenge was just trying to orientate myself when you couldn't actually look up. You were being sort of blasted by this rain and wind. It was incredible.
Yeah, it was, definitely. I mean, it really was I wouldn't say it was a navigator's event because of the fact that in the A class you could actually follow a train of people, but definitely if you didn't have your wits about you, you could have walked off in the wrong direction, and you were being blasted in the face. It felt like there was ice being shot at you. So I did have quite a red face the following day.
Well, I certainly would admit to being navigationally challenged a couple of times when I was trying to locate where I was and exactly where the next point was. But we battled on and didn't find it that unpleasant. It was just a real good limit to test yourself, your wits, your navigation, as well as your gear.
Yeah, completely. And it was a really good test of gear. I took a new pack, which I found really good. I took a new waterproof from Montaigne, found that fantastic. Was really glad that I'd actually taken my event jacket rather than something a little bit less. So it was definitely a good test of your wits and your kit, 100%.
So were you sort of quite surprised and disappointed at the end there, as you got down to the campsite, that it had actually been cancelled?
I wasn't surprised it had been cancelled. I sort of figured there was a possibility that could happen. And I was slightly disappointed because I would have really liked to have run yesterday. And the conditions yesterday, you know, were completely different. We would have had a really good day out. But I fully understood the reasons why they'd cancelled. And with knowing that a lot of people hadn't actually made the midway camp, it was fair enough. Plus, they didn't have all the kit set up, did they? They didn't have the electronic dibber machinery there, so they didn't have the computers and stuff, so they couldn't actually track where people were. So, again, you know, completely fair that they did cancel the event, but, you know, a bit unfortunate for everybody.
Certainly. Did you find at any stage, or did you see at any stage on the hills and on your route that you took, anybody in any kind of difficulty at all?
Yeah, a couple of people. There was one guy, and you always get a couple of irresponsible people who looked like he was in a Pertex orienteering suit. I almost said something to him and said, I think you ought to go down, and, you know, you're causing yourself problems that you could get into problems here, you know, that you might not get yourself back out of. But he seemed to be okay, and he seemed to be getting on fine, and his partner was conscious of what he was doing, so we left him alone. But you do get those people who, you know, who will shirk what's actually been written down for them. And then there was another guy we saw who his partner had disappeared off about 100 metres in front, not realising that he was in trouble, and he looked like he was on his verges of going into hypothermia. And I ran ahead and got his partner, while my partner David looked after the guy who was becoming hypothermic. And we sent his partner back, and they assessed the situation. He got more clothes on, he warmed up, and we did actually see him at Midway Camp afterwards. Where he gave us a handshake and said, thanks for looking after me, and, you know, he seemed all fine, and there was no problems then. So, yeah, we saw a couple of people who were being challenged with the conditions, but everybody seemed to manage to, you know what they were doing and get through it.
The worsening conditions affected us all in different ways, as we were spread out across the exposed hills and steep valleys. Gentle trickles had become waterfalls, and streams had become torrents. One of those to have a lucky escape was Liz Britton and her partner, Rachel Finlay-Robinson.
I was on the short score, heading down after CC down South Headgill. We just bumped into my dad and sister as well. They were doing a short score on a similar route to us. We headed down and we're trying to get down to DS at the bottom of the valley. There's a group of walkers, one of whom told us not to bother going down to the ford because it was too dangerous to cross, so to cross higher up. So we decided to cross higher up, and my dad and sister decided to ignore them, check it out anyway, so they headed straight down to the ford. We managed to cross without too much effort, and then headed down on the side of the control, and then ran into this other stream / river.
And that was where all the problems started, was it?
Yeah. We saw a couple of other lads jumping across it higher up, near a waterfall, but the jump looked too big for us to manage. Rach didn't feel comfortable trying it, and I didn't particularly either. So we went lower down, nearer the main river, because it looked a bit narrower. There's an island in the main South Headgill, and we managed to cross onto that with the hope that we could get back below the mouth of this other stream. But that didn't particularly work. But we saw Phil and Tim for the first time then, and they'd asked if we were all right. We said we'd manage and find a way back, which we did. Came back the way we came, and then attempted for the second time to cross this other stream. We managed to get halfway across, and then it just whisked away under my feet.
So I gather you're not a very tall person, would that be fair?
Yeah, I'm fairly little. I'm a nice 5'1".
Oh my word, so a good torrent of water would whisk you away fairly quickly then?
Well, yeah, it wasn't particularly deep. I think it was only above my waist-ish. It wasn't... I didn't feel, oh, my God, this is well above my chest type thing. I think it was only waist-deep. I did foolishly kind of think, oh, it'll be all right, I'll just hop off after this little bump here. But, unfortunately, it was a bit more than a bit of a bump. There was about a 4-foot-ish type little drop just after I went under, which smacked the side of my head on. And then I kind of bounced a bit like a rag doll down, hit my back and hit pretty much everywhere, really. But I managed to flail so much I'd grabbed onto a rock. As I tried to pull myself up, it just came away with me, hit me on the other side of my head, on my face. Got a nice black eye from it today. Carried on after this rock came down with me, and then all of a sudden it just stopped again, and I was face first in some grass with my legs were kind of caught around a rock because the stream had tried to take my waterproofs off me as well as another of my base layers. So I had to kind of unhook myself from a rock before I actually pull myself onto the island. I didn't feel I was too badly damaged then because I managed to move my legs to unhook myself, but couldn't really function much else, really.
So I should imagine your partner, Rachel, was doing a nut at this stage?
Yes. From what I've heard, she was fairly hysterical. She bumped into my dad and sister, who were trying to cross the same stream further up, having decided the ford was a no-go. Yeah, Dad just saw her and came straight down the hill for her. And then she got sent up to the nearest radio point, which I think was on Escor. But the walkers had a Dartmoor Mountain Rescue with them. And he just so happened to have a phone.
And so he was able to start the ball rolling from that point of view. So on the island itself, your dad and partner and a couple of other guys joined you, I understand, and really started to keep you warm?
Yeah, Phil and Tim saw me first. Tim ran up to try and... They were very concerned about where Rachel was. So Tim ran up and saw my dad and sister coming down. And I think they met and explained that Rachel had gone for help. I could only just hear them yelling across the bank to me because the wind was so strong. But eventually they managed to get Dad across onto the island and then decided that it would be easiest and safest for everyone if they were all on the island. So they got my sister across, who's also only a nice, measly 5'2". And, they just wrapped me up in this ice blanket, got all my layers on that they could find in my bag, and got a tent up and a hot chocolate on. I was actually very, very surprised about how efficient space blankets were, never having to use one of them before.
Did you sort of feel scared or, you know, very, very vulnerable at any stage? Or were you sort of all of you able to look after yourselves, as it were?
I personally was having seesaw moments of, oh, God, I might actually die. Oh, no. No, there's people here. I'll be all right. And then I kind of went through phases of my whole body convulsion shiverings, and then it settled again. And I'm a medical student at Sheffield, and I kept having all these things about, like, all these lectures going through my head, going on hypothermia and stuff. And it just, yeah, it was a fairly scary time for me. But Emily kept me going. We sat there singing ABBA, going through our favourite songs. So I think Phil was brilliant. Him and Tim remained completely calm and just got on with it. They knew exactly what to do and just sorted us all out, really.
Did you know Phil and Tim before this?
No. No, I'd never met them before in my life. They were coming back to check on me and Rachel from where we'd been sat on the other island anyway, apparently.
Well, bless them. Yeah, I bet you send them a Christmas card.
Yep, definitely.
And so what's the sum total of your injuries then? Because it sounded like a very dramatic accident.
I've come off very lightly. I've had a black eye and a rather large chipmunk cheek, which is now green, but it's mostly just bruises and 1 3-millimetre hairline fracture in my wrist.
Well, I'm pleased to hear that it's so minor, and I presume you're on the mend or intending to be on the mend as soon as possible. Has it put you off the event at all?
No, not at all. It wasn't anything to do with the event's fault. It was a silly decision by me. Next time I'm going to be a bit more aware of raging rivers.
You rejoin us as we've got 10 minutes to go to get within our 5-hour limit. And as you can tell, the weather hasn't let up in the slightest. And we've just had to wade knee-deep across a river, which wasn't there before, thigh-deep for Rose. And I can assure you, it's very, very cold. We haven't had a successful day, really. Made lots of little navigational errors, all my fault. Been a good exercise to make my mind focus on distances and heights and so on. But it's been atrocious weather. Weather that challenges you, because navigation itself is one thing, but navigation when you actually can't look up without being beaten by raindrops and hail is something else. It's just pouring off me. My gloves are literally five pockets of water seeping down the outside of the jacket, I guess, and funneling in there. And every time I lift my hands up to look at the map, the water runs up to my armpit or my elbow. We're trying to get down the path now as fast as we can. So it's a K or so to go. But we're definitely going to be over time. And you just got to watch your footing. It's been very, very tough going on the foot. The weather has been like this every inch of the way. The clouds come down a few times and killed visibility. And I will happily admit to being quite despondent a couple of times when you're literally so cold and, well, the gear's okay. We're not wet as in soaking wet, soaked to the skin, but all our peripheries are wet and thus cold. So our hands are cold, feet are cold, because we're just continually wading through streams. I'm a bit concerned about Rose. She's complained a couple of times about her body core dropping down a bit. So she's not taken off her insulation layer, which she'd normally do in the first 10 minutes. A very, very tough and demanding day. And I'm looking forward to that hot chocolate tonight and as much dried food and a hot, warm sleeping bag. Please, God, don't let the ex-bed bags leak. That's the last thing we need now. Our feet are just so cold that they're numb, so I actually can't feel my toes as I put them down. So of course, trying to step carefully and not trip over rocks is quite odd. We've got brave people taking shortcuts right off very steep and slippy areas, and the rest of us are using the path, which is currently a stream. You all right, Rose? My God, the whole valley is just water. It's all going to one place. I just certainly hope it isn't our campsite. Oh! This Paramo Velez top, 100% success rate. Fantastic. Thoroughly recommend it when it hits the streets. Certainly lighter than normal Velez and just as waterproof. All the little streams that coming off the off the hillside are now considerably bigger. So big, in fact, you can't cross them where they normally cross. They would sweep you away and straight over the edge. So everybody's treating them with an immense amount of respect, especially at this last stage when we're all tired and just want to get in and have a brew. Oh. Here's one, it's at least 6 inches deep, which I'm now wading through to get through. Just watching the guys ahead of me cross that big stream I'm about to do very carefully. Okay, cross this one carefully, Rose. Slightly on the inside towards that branch there. Okay, fingers crossed, here we go. Woo! So Rosie does.
slipping and sliding all the way around the room.
That looked like fun, crossing the river.
Oh,
not bad, thank you. Can you do a jog to warm it? Could you manage a jog? Sorry?
Yeah.
Well, there's a toilet, so it's not far. Straight through, I think. I have to say, these conditions, these mud claws, have been fantastic. Really gripping and solid. Oh. Hiya.
That's all right. The radio event is cancelled. Are
you on your own? No, no, I'm just
here. Need to get them all together, and I only need to say it once.
Okay then.
Together and then I only need to say it once. The event's cancelled.
Is it?
Yeah. So can I get these two together?
Yeah.
Cancelled.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well done. The event has had to tomorrow. Be cancelled because of the weather.
Yeah, no, I understand.
There's a finish kite down on the right hand side, so punch it, then sharp left into the barn, they'll give you hot soup.
Right.
And you give your number and they'll tell you what to do next. So
thank you. Yeah. Cheers. So, after all that, it's cancelled. Well, surprisingly enough, Sunday morning, and once again it's raining, but nowhere near what it was doing last night. What a tortuous night it was. We got back. As you heard, the event was cancelled, went into the barn, tried to get warm, told to walk the 5 miles back to Borrowdale, which we duly started to do. Thought we wouldn't bother getting changed, and quite right too. And we're on the road again this morning, which yesterday we were virtually crawling on our hands and knees to get up. The wind and the power and the rain was just phenomenal. And it was head down and battling all the way, wasn't it, Rose?
Yeah, and at the top of the valley, the whole river was like a river. It was just incredible. You just didn't want to lose your footing. You'd just be swept away, literally. It was just unbelievable.
The volume of water and the sheer power of the wind had everybody battling. It was a very enlightening experience, and also reminds you, really, that even an event like this, they always say, we'll plan for the worst, but good job we had the appropriate gear, because we got to the top of the pass and there was a police vehicle there and it said, sorry, the other side's closed, you have to go back. So I think we probably walked, I would say, something like 4 miles there and back in atrocious conditions, and as you can imagine, most people were fairly disheartened by the time they got back to the cattle shed.
I'm also pretty tired, having just finished an event for 5, 6, 7 hours as appropriate.
So it was a case of we commandeered the cattle barn, and it was a huge concrete construction, and it became the biggest body of the year. I think it probably must have had, people were making various estimates, but there must have been at least 400, 500 plus people in there. We all sort of vied for our own little spaces, got out the gear as best we could, changed as best we could, got into our sleeping bags and bivy bags to try and warm up, and put a brew on, and most people went to bed by about 6 o'clock.
It was just a phenomenal sight, wasn't it? All these odd little head torches and burble of conversation, which gradually died away by, you know, about 8 o'clock, I guess. Everyone was sort of seemed to be quiet, and then it sort of started again about 5:30, 6 o'clock this morning. Of course, the clock's going back as well. It was quite interesting, that sort of natural alarm clock for everybody. Everyone started stirring and moving. I'm waiting to see what the news was.
So it's now 8:49, which means it's 7:49 with our clocks going back, and we're on the way back to Borrowdale with about 1,000 other people. After a fairly dramatic weekend, both weather and media, we've now recovered, got all our gear back home, spent a couple of days tiring the washing machine out and drying things and airing things. So as much as we went into detail before we left about the gear that we were taking and our choices, I think it's only fair that we could do a very, very quick review on successes and failures of any particular product that we took for people's reference. Certainly from a clothing point of view, starting from the bottom and working up for both of us, I had the Innovate Mud Claws, which were absolutely superb. I can see why they're the choice of mountain marathon runners. They stick to the ground, they grip everything, there wasn't the slightest hesitation about where my foot was. Fantastic. I had the new Montane trail tights, although I was wearing waterproof, Berghaus waterproof trousers over the top, and I did wade a couple of times through some rivers up to my thighs. The tights didn't seem to hold the moisture and give me a cold, clammy feeling. On my upper body, I had the Paramo t-shirt and the new Paramo Velez lightweight smock. Again, I felt very comfortable for the whole event. It certainly kept, obviously, the wind and the rain out, or the majority of the rain out. I think the water that and the dampness that I did feel on my skin when I eventually stripped off was actually the water that had probably made its way down my wrists from the gloves mitts as it dribbled into my arms, and also the stuff that got through my face in the hood, because every time you looked up, you just got blasted by water. So that's quickly the clothes I was wearing. What about you, Rose?
I got the 282 Ladies Innovates, which were really good. Some X socks, which were fabulous. The up and running full length running tights, which were on offer before the event.
The Energy.
They were great. Very much like yours. Had waterproof trousers, which I didn't really take off, which were the Go Light, which are also really good, except that they've got a short zip, which I dislike about them. It only sort of goes up to the calves. Top I had the Bionic Tee, long sleeve Bionic Tee Montane, which was fab, loved it. And I put a fleece on at the last minute, which I'm really pleased I did, which is just a thin North Face one. Superfly jacket, which I love. It was absolutely brilliant as usual. Like you, though, I did get sort of when we actually finally got to a point of stripping off, the my arms were quite wet. But I'm sure that was cuffs and water coming in that way, because my core was damp but dry. It wasn't sort of wet coming through. So the jacket did it fantastically. Go Like peak cap. Which I held on. I needed to hold on under my hood with a earband, just to keep it my ears warm and keep the cap on. But the cap actually then kept the rain out of our faces a bit.
Yeah, I think I was the same as well. I had the same cap on and a headband, and I didn't take them off or move them through the whole trip. And they certainly, I think everybody had some kind of cap. I saw to keep the wind and the weather away from their faces, because it was. As you know, coming in fairly rough. The rest of the gear all performed very, very well indeed. The rucksacks were fine. They're probably the things that were the most useful, and certainly I understand that they sold out of at the shop before the event, were the X-Bed waterproof bags. Without them, everybody would have had a much different event.
Definitely.
It was the sleeping bags were dry, the spare clothes were dry,
the down
jacket was dry, so that was fine. The mistake I made would be, I'd fair to admit, the triad stove that I took, the little meth stove. And the meths, obviously, as good as it was, and it worked, but it was just took far too long. I had forgotten just how desperate you are for warm water to a warm food as fast as possible. So really, I should have taken a small gas cart and a small gas cooker, of which I've got plenty that I could have used. But I suppose I was going for the romantic view, which actually didn't turn out that way.
Not quite romantic.
The tent was untried, so we couldn't really talk about
about that. The walking poles, we did both try the walking poles at various stages during the 5.5 hours we were up there. But I think they were great. There's nothing negative about them apart from because they were so light and the wind was so strong, you actually had to put so much effort in controlling the poles and sorting out where they were going. The wind was just sweeping them away.
And most of our focus was where you're going to put your feet, let alone poles.
Yeah, so again, the poles were needed for the tent, but from a practical point of view, they didn't work as effectively as we thought they would in those conditions. I think everything else was pretty much as we anticipated it being. The food that we took, the dried packet food, and then, we just had the dried packet food, actually, in the bars and things. We didn't actually tuck into the pasta that we cooked because, obviously, the event had finished early anyway, so there was no need for that. And I think, really, in all honesty, by the time we came back down from Honiston Pass, that horrible afternoon's walk up to the top and back down again, we were quite despondent and quite cold, and when we eventually got everything out onto the concrete platform in the barn where we and lots of others were, I was pleased to find that the Torsolite pad that we used and the survival zone bivy bag, which were both wrapped in a waterproof bag which was shoved on the outside of the rucksack, were of great benefit, because at least then we could get all the gear out and get into our sleeping bags. For reference, my bag was a Vango Venom 300, and Rose's was the Marmot Hydrogen. I made a note that I went to sleep about 6 o'clock and woke up at 6 a.m. the following day, which was, of course, the clocks had gone back anyway, so that was a good 12, 13 hours sleep. But in that sleeping bag, I was wearing dry socks. I'd left my tights on. I'd left my waterproof trousers on. I put my silk base layer on. I got my down jacket on. I put the Paramo on. I was inside the silk liner, and I was inside the sleeping bag, and I was also inside the bivy bag as well for most of the night, until the moisture that was coming off my clothes soaked the inside of the bivy bag, so I sort of semi-rolled out of that. But I slept as comfortably as you could do under those circumstances. I didn't feel like I'd slept very much, but obviously a good 12, 13 hours of it must have gone past during the night. And you were similar.
Yeah, and I think it was also interesting. I mean, someone did come round and sort of say, you know, if you want to go and camp out, you can. But there was actually quite a nice atmosphere, and the thought of, because it was still pouring with rain at that point, trying to put a tent up in the pouring rain, it was just much easier just to stop in the barn, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think, I mean, everybody's, there's been some odd comments of why didn't you camp out then if you could have done and it was a rescue centre. Well, not really. The event was being called off. It was everybody who'd gone, well, it's either a case we go and stick it outside on a steep bank as it happened, because obviously the camping area was actually flooded, or bed down with everybody else and sing World War II songs. So that's basically the gist of it. Everybody sort of mucked in together, and it was a very sociable, jovial atmosphere, and as we all know, it was portrayed slightly differently when we got back. But more of that later. I just wanted to do a quick review. I don't think there's anything else we've missed out there. Nothing I felt that we should have taken apart from the gas stove, you?
The only other thing we haven't said is obviously we had gloves. I mean, I had some stickies and some Pack-Lite Gore-Tex mitts over the top, but by the end of the day, my hands were sopping wet.
Yeah, mine too. And I think there's obviously we need to look out for our waterproof mitts or waterproof over mitts, over gloves, with very long wrists, because the cuff is one thing that was definitely missing, and everybody was suffering the same way. But apart from that, that was our gear, and on the whole, a great success.
Served us really well. And of course, the obligatory buff.
So that brings us to the end of this, the first extended report at this year's OMM. I hope you've enjoyed sharing the actual racing experience with us and listening to the adventures of others. As you can tell, this event isn't for everybody. Fitness and a love for the outdoors is one thing. Self-reliance and the mental approach to get through this kind of adversity is another. Join us next time as we explore the media storm which blew up around the world as this event was cancelled due to the worsening weather conditions. We analyse the facts with people who actually witnessed them and compare them with the wildly exaggerated reports delivered by the mainstream media who seemed so desperate for a dramatic story.
the show notes on the Outdoor Station will link to various clips and videos associated with this event.
This independent programme is produced and hosted by theoutdoorsstation.co.uk.